Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel. It's Wednesday. Another absolutely gorgeous day here in Beach. I just got to tell you, I'm looking out my window right now. It's about 11 a.m. Eastern time, and there's not a cloud in the sky, hardly any wind. Just looks like a fantastic day. I hope it's as beautiful wherever you are. You know who hasn't been having a beautiful day or week or month or year? United Airlines. We know about how long it was ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. There was video of the police coming onto that plane and dragging a passenger off just so some United Airlines employees could fly to another airport. Well, you know, it seems like yesterday, but it's a few weeks ago. United Airlines has now killed a rabbit. And not just any rabbit, a rabbit that is believed eventually would have been the largest rabbit in the world. I don't know how many people realize, but, you know, here in the United States, as you know, I play disc golf. I see my share of rabbits here in Florida. They're just little things. They are very much like the rabbits that I grew up around in Pennsylvania, in Leechburg, Pennsylvania, which is kind of a out in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, I guess. And just little tiny things running around, running into the brush, you know. This rabbit was huge. And it would have grown, they believe, to be over 4 feet long, I guess, when stretched out. That's crazy. I mean, you look at a picture of this rabbit, and it looks like something from another planet. It looks like something that just cannot be possible. And there was that, wasn't there some horror movie, some really B movie, Night of the Leperis or something like that, where there was huge rabbits that were terrorizing a town. I think that DeForest Kelly, who played Bones on Star Trek, the original Star Trek series, I think he was in it. That's what I thought of when I saw a picture of this rabbit. Well, there is a woman in England who raises these things and ships these rabbits all over the United States and I guess gets paid good money for them. Who wants a rabbit that size? I have no idea. But when the rabbit made it to Chicago, O'Hare Airport, the person who was supposed to pick it up, the person who bought it, and I guess that the person is a well-known person, maybe a I don't know, an actor or musician or somebody. I don't know. The rabbit was dead. So a rabbit that was going to be breaking, the rabbit's name was Simon. A rabbit was going to break a world record probably once it grew to full size, died in the custody of United Airlines. It was shipped in the cargo hold, gets to Chicago, it's dead. I have to say, I don't know what's going on there, and they'll maybe do an autopsy on the rabbit to see exactly what happened. But here's what I also know about rabbits, besides the wild ones. I had a couple friends growing up who had pet rabbits. And one in particular, a guy I was friends with, like my early 20s, I mean, still friends with him, but I haven't seen him in ever forever, but his parents had a rabbit they kept in a cage and everything, and I can remember back then, them telling me, don't make any sudden movements. Don't go up to the cage or yell at the rabbit or, you know, jump at or anything. Because the rabbit could have a heart attack and die. This is what was told to me. So that goes through my mind as I'm thinking about this rabbit that died in the cargo hold of a United Airlines jet. That rabbits don't handle stress too well and they don't like to be surprised. I don't know if that's true or not. I just remember that from like 25 years ago. And I'm wondering if that happened. I'm wondering if the rabbit just got so stressed being caged up in this jet that it had a heart attack and died. We'll just have to see. Or was it a lack of oxygen? Or I don't know. I guess we'll eventually find out. And I'll keep my eyes peeled, but United Airlines is not having a very good 2017. I think they're wishing that they could have just skipped this whole entire year. Poor rabbit. I love animals. I don't own any animals, but I have respect for animals. I've always treated animals nicely. I think most animals that I've run into in my life have liked me. And I feel bad for this rabbit, and I feel bad for the owner of the rabbit who was going to take possession of it, probably treat it well, and was going to raise it to be a world record holder and everything else. Horrible story. Let's move on to the show. Ann Coulter is going to be speaking at Berkeley. Remember maybe a month ago I mentioned that she was due to speak at Berkeley. And this announcement was made in the wake of Milo not going there. And I made all the big deal about that and the riots and how I believe that a lot of these people who, conservatives or whatever, whatever you want to call Milo, it's kind of nice to not see him in the news anymore, I have to admit. But these people who go to these campuses and then the students protest, the students riot, and these people still continue to show up at these places. And as I've told you, I think that this has increasingly become less about conservatism and free speech for these conservatives showing up, but it's become more about the spectacle and them getting attention. I stand by that statement, and there's nothing that that it's ever going to change that in my mind. I'm 46 years old, and I think I know what makes a lot of these speakers tick. And what makes them tick is the controversy, them seeing their names on websites, in the newspaper, if you're still into that, on TV. So the next time they go on a show, one of their shows that they show up on, they can talk about, see how scared they are of me, how afraid they are. They're afraid of conservatism. And really, it's just all about them. It's not about what they're going to say. It's not about the substance. It's not about fixing problems. It's all about them and the attention that they're getting. And the bigger the riot, the better. And see, that's the other part that I can't get out of my mind, is that I think in the case of people like Milo, people like Ann Coulter, they're kind of disappointed when they aren't protested against. And in fact, it could be that they want this stuff to happen in a way. You know, there is a kind of psychology out there, not just in politics and everything, but, you know, you want to get your way so bad that you want something bad to happen so you can prove that you're right. And it's a very self-righteous type of attitude, that you're actually hoping that something happens. You're not necessarily predicting it, and you're afraid of it. You actually want to see it happen for your own benefit. And I think that's what's going on here. I think that's what's going on with Ann Coulter. I think it's going on with too many conservatives these days. I think that Tomi Lahren is like that. And it's all in an effort to get attention, get eyeballs, get clicks, get likes, get, you know, views, get downloads, on and on and on. And I can tell you, I don't want to have anything to do with any of it. This show, I would like to think, is all about substance. It's not about me. It's not about creating, you know, saying something to create controversy. You know, I really, you know, the way I am, is that I have to tell you, I don't mind arguing and having deep discussions with people and all of that, but when it gets to the point that I think that if I show up, somebody else is going to suffer, that if I show up and I had an appointment to speak at Berkeley and I knew because of that that some business owner was going to have all of his or her windows shattered, or some bank was going to have its ATM ripped off, you know, ripped away, and it may be that some cops were going to get injured, I wouldn't show up. I wouldn't show up. I would think that there would be better ways to get my message across than that. It wouldn't be so much me shrinking away, me fearing this or anything, and saying, well, are you going to allow them to win? Nobody wins when other people's stuff is getting broken. Nobody wins. Nobody wins. Should those people pay for my insistence that my free speech be respected and show up at Berkeley? No. There are other ways to get the message out about conservatism that probably are even more efficient. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, if you really, really, really want to get down to it, going and speaking in front of a bunch of people anywhere, you know, being there in person is probably the most inefficient way to communicate these days. It used to be the most efficient because there weren't telephones and email and the internet and everything else. You actually had to go somewhere and get in front of a people and stand on a soapbox or stand in a town square as people were riding their horses by, and that's the way to do it. That is the most inefficient way to spread a message these days. But these people continue to do it. Why? Because it generates controversy and they get paid to do it. Not because it's actually about spreading a good message. Podcasting is one of the most efficient ways. Posting something on Facebook is one of the most efficient ways. Having a radio show, a regular terrestrial radio show, is one of the most efficient ways. I guess being on TV is one of the most efficient ways. Going somewhere in person is the least efficient, but these people insist on doing it. So is it about the message or is it about them? I mean, these college Republicans at Berkeley and other campuses too, who are scheduling these speakers, you know, you don't have to go along with them. I know that they want, and they're fighting against liberals on campus. Well, you know what? You're going there. You fight them. You're the one who chose to go there knowing what you were going to get into. You fight them. You don't need me. You know, they don't need Ann Coulter to come there and pick up the troops and everything. They can do it themselves. So there is a whole realm of reasons that I'm against all of this. Now, if that's to say somebody invites me to go speak, I will if I think that other people aren't going to have to suffer. People who have nothing to do with the group, me, my politics, or anything else are going to have to suffer. Then if that's going to happen, I'm not showing up. It's just not worth it to me. Now, yes, should the Berkeley police and whoever else be trying to take care of these people and try to control them and everything? Yes. But as long as they don't, it's their town. If they want to run it that way and have the inmates running the asylum, I don't know what you can do about that. All I know is I don't want to be a part of it. We as conservatives, I thought we believed in a bit of law and order. Shouldn't it be, yes, you want me to go speak in your town, but you have no control of your town. You're afraid to enforce the laws in your town. So because of that, I'm not showing up. Wouldn't that be the conservative thing to do? I just don't see anybody writing about it that way. I don't hear anybody talking about it that way. I think that, and the reason I think is too many people have got caught up in the conflict, have gotten caught up in the drama, wanting to see as if this is some sort of gladiator contest. It's not. It's about changing minds, it's about winning minds, it's about changing minds, it's about showing how one ideology is better than another. It's not about shouting in each other's faces and showing up just to spite a bunch of people and then have a third party suffer for it. You know, and the thing is, I say this and I don't think that I'm too gentlemanly or anything. I could see if this was like the first time or the second time, just to prove a point. for to really, as if Milo or Ann Coulter were actually discovering something. By them showing up at Berkeley, it was showing for the first time how kooky the professors and the students there are. And it would be like a reveal, a secret unmasked. I get that, to show that who they really are. The issue is, after almost 50 years of Berkeley craziness and even more recent craziness on all sorts of college universities universities and college campuses, everybody already knows. And everybody already either hates it or loves it. So there's nothing to be gained. There's nothing to be revealed. There's no lesson to be made. All of the lessons have already been taught regarding this phenomenon in the United States of how kooky there are kooky people on college campuses. That's not news. So I don't understand all of this. All of this. As I've talked about, although I haven't talked about it recently, I would rather talk to a bunch of curious, ignorant people. People who want to learn, who really don't know a lot, but who are eager, they're honest, they're interested, but those types of people, just sit that type, even if they're not aren't conservative, they aren't liberal, they're just curious. They want to learn. I'll speak to a group of them anywhere for free than speak to a bunch of arrogant know-it-alls, even if they're conservatives, who call themselves conservatives. That's the way I am. I think that what's in their heart matters. What's in their head matters. Are they curious? Are they willing to learn? Are they willing to listen? Are they willing to have discussions and things like that? And as long as I encounter people like that, those are the people I want to talk to. And this maybe is a way that I am different. I don't like speaking to the choir, because that's all Ann Coulter would be doing, going to something like this. That's all any of these speakers at any of these campuses end up doing. Yes, they may have one crank here and there that gets to the microphone, and I know they break in and protest and everything else, but 99% of the people at one of these speaking engagements is already conservative. Once again, showing how inefficient it is. I think it's a bad look. I just do. And it's no surprise that when it comes up, something like that, it's these most, you know, wild and crazy figures like Milo and Ann who want to go and do this the most. That is not a coincidence. They love that kind of stuff. Can I just say it in so many words? They love the violence in their own way. I don't think they want anybody to get killed, they like seeing driving liberals mad to the point that other people's stuff are getting destroyed. Here's what I know. If Ann Coulter was going to show up at Berkeley and her own apartment or house was going to get torched or the windows broken or broken into, in the same way with Milo, she wouldn't be going. But that it's somebody else's town, somebody else's store, somebody else's street that's going to get damaged, then she doesn't mind it. That's what I think I know. Let's move on to something else. Something, I guess, totally different. ESPN today is laying off 100 people. And quite a few. Going to be about 50, so 50% is going to be on-air talent, and the other 50 is going to be behind-the-scenes people. And already, as I came to the microphone this morning, Eastern time, some of those on-air personalities had already tweeted out and said that they'd been cut by ESPN. There are a lot of things going on here, and you know that I've talked about ESPN a few times before from various angles. from the angle of cable cutting, and that has a little bit to do, I think, with what's going on, from the horrible programming that I think ESPN does. The only time that I even labor to watch ESPN is when an actual... As you know, I don't have TV anyway. But if I'm over at my brother's, for example, watching his house, watching his dog while he and his wife are gone, the only time ESPN even gets on the TV is if there is a game on of some type, football, baseball, whatever else. So that's part of it. There's the politics of ESPN that is obviously to the liberal side, and that's been going on for a long time, that there are announcers that can spout liberal ideas and stay there, and then Rush Limbaugh was on ESPN. Remember way back in the day? That was back in the, man, that was like 2002, 2003, 2004. I remember I was working at Star Trek The Experience when that happened, and then he was canned for saying that they just want a black quarterback. Remember Donovan McNabb, all that. So it's a combination of things that I think that has caused this for ESPN. But I think there's something else as well. And I think this is probably a big deal of this, about this. Increasingly, because of technology, and I just spoke about the efficiency and the inefficiency of communication regarding Ann Coulter and anybody who goes to a college campus to speak. It's an inefficient way to spread a message because all you have are the people in the audience. Unless there is a simulcast being done on the internet or there's a live video on Facebook Live or YouTube or something like that, it's very inefficient. The way that ESPN covers sports is inefficient. And I think what has happened is with the changing of technology, with more and more people having access to podcasting and Facebook Live and YouTube and everything, what you now have is regular people who don't have broadcasting degrees, maybe never went to college, but they just have an interest. They may be an accountant or a teacher or an engineer or a cook or anything like, you know, something like that is their regular job, but they take an interest in their sports teams. Whether in my case it's the Steelers or the Penguins or the Pirates, or if somebody takes an interest in Premier League soccer or whatever else, those people are engaged with those teams and always following things that are going on out there. And I give you a perfect example of this. I go to a site once in a while in the offseason called SteelersDepot.com. An excellent, excellent Pittsburgh Steelers blog. Done by a guy who I think he lived in Tennessee or somewhere, but now he lives in California. But he runs it, and then he does a podcast with one of the radio broadcasters in Pittsburgh. It's David Bryan and David Todd. And David Todd is the radio guy in Pittsburgh, local guy. And then once in a while, there are a couple other people who do podcasting on the site as well. You are going to learn more about the Steelers on that site than you are going to learn about anything regarding the Steelers on ESPN.com or any other sports site in the world. These guys have their finger on everything Steelers, even in the offseason. We have the draft coming up. And I think what's happening is that I think that ESPN, the people who run ESPN, know this is going on. And Steelers Depot is not unusual. There's a kind of site like this for every kind of team in the United States out there, whether it's football or baseball or hockey or NASCAR or NBA, whatever. It doesn't matter. There are sites being run by regular people, and those sites are just as informative, if not more informative, than ESPN is. There's another point to all of this, and I've known this for years. You know, you ever, if you've ever watched ESPN and they say, oh, our ESPN insider, Adam Schefter, has found out, and they make it sound like that's something that Adam Schefter found out on his own, like he has a secret contact, for example, in the Steelers. He has a secret contact who is sending him out information, what's going on in the locker room and what the real injury of Le'Veon Bell is and everything. It's not that at all. You know who Adam Schefter is getting his news from? Some local beat reporter in Pittsburgh. And I think over time, as these local news stations and radio shows have become more adept at getting their message out and having standalone shows, local shows, standalone websites and everything, it's kind of drowned out ESPN. Because generally, people take an interest in teams. They don't take necessarily an interest in sports. I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And yes, when I had TV, I might watch other games. But I don't care who's getting injured on other teams. I don't care necessarily about the stats. But I'm not a fantasy football guy either. But still, the NFL and everything is run by fans of teams. The Steelers, the Patriots, the Raiders, the Cowboys, and the rest of them. And I think those people, because both men and women are that way, they really, in the end, just want to hear about the news that affects their own team, not necessarily about other teams. So it's become very specialized. Sports has become very specialized. People's interest in sports have become very specialized. And I think that also hurts ESPN, that people don't want to watch it and then just happen to hear that little tidbit about their team when they know that they can go to SteelersDepot.com and read every single thing about the Steelers. This has also hurt ESPN. And see, this is something that I think is working its way through entertainment and communications and news as a whole. And ESPN, I think, is suffering from it this way because ESPN gets direct money from the cable companies. ESPN, that bill that you pay, there is money in that bill that goes directly to ESPN because ESPN is part of every subscriber package on every cable company or dish company in the United States. And as people have found out that they're more specialized viewers than what ESPN can offer, and they're getting a lot of channels on top of it that they don't want, and they find that they can get in Netflix or they can go to certain places on the internet, or they can get some package through NFL.com to watch just their team on their TV or on the computer or whatever else, ESPN becomes less and less relevant. On top of what I said, I think there are just a lot of regular people who are now in their spare time as a hobby, some of them making money at it too, if they're popular enough, advertising money, sponsor money, doing it on their own. And that drowns out ESPN as well. And I think, once again, I think the higher-ups start thinking, why do we have all this on-air talent and paying them millions of dollars when we have all these other people who are setting up websites, not for free, but, I mean, to run a website does not take a lot of money. It doesn't. Why are we paying these people? What are we doing? And so it's a conglomeration thing. Now, I know that there are going to probably be other conservative commentators who are going to just work on the one angle. Well, the reason ESPN is having problems is because they've been spouting too many liberal ideas because of Colin Kaepernick not standing up for the national anthem. I'm not convinced of that. I think that may be a small part of it. You know, and they talk about, well, look at the NFL. Look how its viewership was down this year. It was. But I think that the Colin Kaepernick thing, and there may be a correlation, but I'm not sure that there's causation. The truth, is that there's just more ways to watch the NFL these days that can't be measured. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There are a lot of people who have cut their cable, but are still finding ways to watch the NFL, and those people are not being measured. I think that that's what's going on. And it's not so much the politics of it. It's a conglomeration of a lot of things that are adding up, obviously, considerably for ESPN. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. I could talk about, of course, communications and where I think communication, the spreading of news and conservatism and everything is going. I think it's going in some fascinating directions. And I do believe that eventually you're going to see that ESPN is going to be a relic. I think eventually a lot of these companies that we think are going to last for a long time aren't going to, because the way to spread information is going to get easier and easier and easier. In fact, these days, for example, that shooting that was just in Paris on the Champs-Élysées, that was captured by just some regular person who was a tourist with a phone and just happened to have their camera phone pointed in the right direction when the shooting happened. You can hear the gunshots and everybody starts running and everything. More and more breaking news is coming from regular people who are on the scene with their phones and they start filming something than anything that these news companies devoting millions, if not billions of dollars to it, can do. These companies now have to rely on citizen reporters to send them the videos, and then what is it? These companies then make millions and millions of advertising dollars off of what some regular person did with their phone. At some point, that's all going to break down. That relationship is that's going to happen. And when it does, I think that the Fox Newses and CNNs and MSNBCs, and it's not going to happen, you know, next year or anything. It might not even be in my lifetime. But I think that we get to a point where if the freedom of speech and freedom of the press is allowed to continue, that you're just going to have people who report news. And they're not going to be affiliated with some big company. And you aren't going to have talking heads and everything. It's going to be more along the lines of what people are already doing to a lesser extent on YouTube. Or like I brought up the SteelersDepot.com issue. You're going to have just regular people in a city, Tampa, Washington, D.C., Houston, L.A., who are going to devote their time to nothing but L.A. news. And they're going to have their own context of friends. Hey, have you heard anything today? You know, they're going to be listening to police scanners and things like that. And that's the way news is eventually going to go, I think. And all this stuff with beautiful men and women and talking heads, and I think it eventually all goes away due to technology, because of other ways that we are learning to communicate with each other. It's just going to take some time. Let's move on to something else. Tax cuts or tax reform? This is an interesting question. I saw this somewhere, and unfortunately, I could not. I saw this a couple days ago, and I didn't save it on my computer. And then when I went to go find it in the article again, I couldn't find it. It's an interesting question. It's particularly interesting today because Trump says that the United States is going to get the largest tax cuts in history, and is bragging all about this. But when I saw this article from a few days ago, it does pose a question, because we as conservatives, you know, we're always talking about tax cuts and corporate taxes are too high and all of this. And I'm not saying that we're wrong. But if I had my choice between tax cuts and tax reform, one or the other, I would take tax reform. I think what makes the financing of our government, the federal government and state governments, so difficult, so hard to change, is because the tax system in our country is a mess. And when I talk about tax reform, I mean a simplification of the code. Instead of keeping things the way they are and just fooling around with the tax cut numbers, lowering this by 5%, lowering that by 10%, lowering the corporate tax rate down to 5%, or whatever we want to do, because all it is manipulating a humongous maze that nobody can get out of anyway. All you're really doing there is, when you're doing that, to continue on the maze analogy, is making the hallways wider. You're not simplifying it. You're just making it easier for people to walk and pass by each other as they try to figure their way out of it. But they're still stuck. It doesn't matter how wide a hallway is in a maze if you can't work your way out of it. And we gotta make the maze disappear. Got to. And the simplification of it would help. The problem is that a lot of people, although they may say they want tax reform, when you start talking about tax reform and getting rid of deductions and all these, people start going, whoa, 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 you can't do that. Well, it is those deductions and child credits, and are you single, are you married, that makes it all so dang difficult. And what has happened, it's gotten to the point where our tax system is not something that exists for the prime reason of collecting revenue. It exists for political reasons to pit one group against another. And so that's why I think that tax reform is, because even if you cut taxes, you can still have that class warfare that can happen in politics. We need tax reform to the point where taxes can't be used in politics. We need a tax system where you can't pit one group against another. And by manipulating deductions and manipulating percentages and things. So that's the way I see it. The way I look at our tax system, it's a bunch of not necessarily bad ideas all put together to sum up to one hugely, hugely horrible idea. This is one of the reasons that when you get into a discussion about compromise and you talk about somebody who says, well, all the groups, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats, they just need to get together and work toward gathering this country. Some of them need to compromise, and these people need to compromise, and they need to find something in the middle. Well, that's something you in the middle is our tax system in the United States. Probably the biggest issue and problem in the United States. What is it? It's a conglomeration of Republican and Democrat compromising for decades, going back to when the income tax became an amendment to the Constitution. And you know how I feel about that. I think that the income tax is unconstitutional despite it being an amendment, because it's a tax on survival. And I think that's immoral. You can't have something that's both constitutional and immoral. So thinking about this, if you ever get into a discussion with somebody, will you just point out to them, you know, our tax system is just a series of compromises by Democrats and Republicans over a series of decades. It doesn't really reflect a Republican or conservative view of tax revenue generation, and it really seriously doesn't reflect a Democrat liberal form of tax revenue generation. So it's a combination of both. How's that working for you? How's it working? If our tax system in the United States was, let's say, a building that was being built step by step by step, you'd see Art Deco matched with a classical style, matched with Soviet construction around 1955, mixed with log cabin, mixed with Frank Lloyd Wright, and all put together. Now, I'm not saying that any one of those designs is necessarily bad, except maybe that Soviet thing. They're not necessarily any of them particularly ugly, but you put them all together and what do you get? You get a mess. Nobody wants to live in that building. Nobody wants to live in that house. Nobody wants to buy that building. Even though at one time or another, what you were offering up was the best design of that period. The most interesting, the most hot, you know, that people wanted to live in. Well, you know, things change. Fashions change. Building styles change. Bell bottoms, skinny jeans, hip huggers, you know. Things change. Or a tax system is a bunch of those building styles all put together into something that nobody would ever buy. But unfortunately, we're all stuck living in it. But nobody wants to change it. Instead, what people want to do is, well, maybe all we got to do is just cut back on the Frank Lloyd Wright section a little bit. And, you know, maybe wall that off a little bit, and a little bit more of the classical Greek architecture with the pillars and the, you know, the gargoyles and all of that. And then over here, you know, that the kind of building, that Soviet style stuff, it's a little boring. We need to change that up a little bit. Nobody wants to just get rid of the whole thing. They want to just tweak it here and there as if that's going to make it better. It's not. This is why I'm more of a tax reform guy than a tax cut guy. I'll be honest with you. I know this is going to sound crazy coming from a conservative, but I'm not, except for the corporate tax in the United States, except for that. When I look at the individual rates for, and I, you know, I don't like income taxes. And I don't. I think they're unconstitutional. I think I wish they were zero, but I know I'm not going to get my way. The income tax is not necessarily unusual in the United States. It's not outrageous. We do not have European style income tax rates. We do not have Canadian income style tax rates. We don't have most of the rest of the world's. If you're going to judge it that way. So as much as I love tax cuts and all of that, we're already cutting. We already want to cut something that I'm not so sure is out of line with what other countries are doing. Not that that is the final decider, but like I said, I don't like the tax cut. I don't like income tax anyway. I think they're wrong. And I'm not going to sit here as some dreamer saying that every income tax rate should be cut down to 10% or 5% or 0% or, you know, any other number that you can pull out of your head. And so this is another reason that I don't get excited about tax cuts. The other part of this is that as much as conservatives sold it for a long time, tax cuts don't pay for themselves. That's a lie. Although there is the Laffer curve, and by decreasing tax rates, you can increase revenue. I do not dispute with the Laffer curve at all. I'm just not so sure at what point we are at on the Laffer curve. I'm not even sure Arthur Laffer could tell you. If we were to cut this tax rate and that tax rate and this corporate tax rate and cut this and cut that, what would revenue end up being 2 years from now? I don't think anybody knows. I think that the economy would increase. I think that that might help that. I'm not sure that what it would do to deficits. I'm not sure what it would do to the national debt. I'm not sure what it would do to interest rates. I'm not sure. Whereas I'm inclined to believe when you start talking about the taxes, about taxes and how it relates to the economy, I happen to believe what affects the economy much more is regulation and government getting in the way of businesses wanting to do business. I'm not so sure that government is in the way of people spending money. People always wish they had more in their paycheck. But I think the issue we have in the economy in the United States is we need an easier way for businesses to expand. We need easier ways for businesses to start. We need easier ways to use those resources and abilities that we have in the United States. And there's a whole bunch of government stuff that gets in the way of that. And none of that has to do with taxes. Even though I realize that regulations are a form of a tax. They are, you have to pay to do this, and you have to pay to get this permit, and you have to pay to do this, and, you know, and all these things that the businesses have to follow with the paperwork to employ people, that drives up the cost of business. So it's a tax. It's an expense. But when you're talking just about tax rates and tax cuts, that's something different. And I see it that when you look at all of the percentages, once again, except for the corporate rate, our tax percentages would be just fine in the United States if the regulation side was changed. All right? Whereas I'm not so sure if we were to lower all the tax rates and everything and kept regulation, it would be the same. I'm not so sure how much that's really going to change what's going on in the United States right at this second regarding employment and the growth rate of the United States and all of that, all of those topics. I think you get more pulling back real regulation and telling a lot of those people who do that stuff just to stay home than cutting tax rates, because I think you get the point with cutting tax rates that it's a law of diminishing returns. And at some point, you just can't do anymore. Even though I'm going to say, once again, for the record, I don't think any of these income tax rates should exist. I think they're unconstitutional. I think they're immoral. I think they're unethical. So I am more of a tax reform guy. I am a guy who believes that all the deductions should be ditched. Absolutely. Every single one of them. I also don't believe in, if you're going to have income tax rates, that everybody should be under. I'm a much bigger fan of the flat tax than what we have going on. And I'm not a fan of VATs or anything like this. But on the other hand, this is going to have to go along with cuts in spending, which nobody wants to do. Donald Trump doesn't want to do it. I don't think Congress wants to do it. Nobody wants to talk about any of that. Real cuts. The federal budget is going to continue to go up and up and up, and there's no tax system, whether it's tax cuts or tax reform, that is ever going to be able to keep up with any of it. Ever. Ever. And we just keep spending. And I don't know what that day is. I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime. If I live to be 80 years old, I don't know. But sometime that's going to come back to bite us. Sometime. I don't think that we can manage this all forever. But we'll just have to see. So tax cuts versus tax reform. I'll take tax reform. I'll take a simplified tax code. Get rid of all those deductions and everything else. And take a lot of this maneuvering, you know, well, we'll give you a half point over here if you go along with us. Take all of that out of it. Because it's become a political football, it's become a political weapon on both sides. When the issue should just be about revenue, and it should be about spending, and it should be about not spending more than we take in. Let's move on to something else. You know, I wonder how Donald Trump is feeling right about now on being on the other side of a conspiracy theory. Saw this article at redstate.com. 56%, a majority of Americans, believe that Russia attempted to influence the 2016 presidential election. Now, as you know, I don't believe that. I believe there were a lot of shenanigans going on, but I do not believe that anybody in Russia was ever sitting there and said, you know what? I think we can mess with this election and cause somebody else to win. I mean, if you're going to do that, and you may be figuring that you're going to get caught anyway, why allow Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton to win? Why not just make it really, really, really crazy and manipulate the numbers and get Bernie Sanders to win just for a joke? I mean, wouldn't that be the ultimate in hacking? And that's what hacking's all about. It's just showing how brave you can be, how daring you can be, how outrageous you can be. You know, it's kind of like no different than mountain climbing, trying to get to Mount Everest, you know, the fastest and everything. That's what hacking is. It's not about necessarily politics. These guys and women are more about just showing how their hacking prowess, not necessarily what they ends up happening. So wouldn't it have been more likely if they were gotten involved in the election that they really wanted to mess up the United States really, really bad and cause some third or fourth or fifth or sixth party person to win? This is another reason that I don't believe the Russians had anything to do with this election. But obviously, a majority of Americans do. And, you know, Donald Trump, he's been on the, to me, the wrong side of the birth certificate argument and the 9/11 argument and the Ted Cruz father killed JFK argument. And now he's the focus of one. There are people now out there who claim it's a conspiracy. And now he's the one who is seen as part of the establishment of the people, those people that he's made fun of for so years, not being able to see the truth. All, you know, holding up the birth certificate and saying, this isn't Barack Obama's birth certificate. How stupid can you be? It's obvious to me that he's not an American citizen. He shouldn't be president. How's it feel, Donald, to be one of the stupid ones now? Who now stands there and says that a conspiracy didn't happen. It's all fake. It's all lies. How's it feel? Because I know that I've had to put up with a little bit of that over the years. And this is particularly rich, and it makes me feel, at least I have to admit, a little bit good. Little Schadenfreude, however you say that word, that German word, taking joy in the misery of others. A little bit of that going on with this particular story. But I think also it shows that Trump's ability to manipulate the news and manipulate people and how he ruled every news cycle as soon as he got into the fray back in May, June of 2015, that's come to an end. If 56% of people, and so when you say 56%, you're going to have to include some conservatives and Republicans in that as well. 56% believe that the Russians attempted to influence this election in some way, then he has lost the argument. Trump has lost this argument, and this story is out of his control. I think that what was going, just people messing around. I really believe that. I don't believe that the Russians were attempting to do any of that. And they're just messing around, disinformation, just for the sake of disinformation, because that's what they do. But I gotta go. EdwardDensel.com is where you can find me. You can find me on Twitter, USA Podcast. This program plays Tuesday through Saturday, 2 a.m. Eastern now. So maybe it has a few of that. You can also find this program at Podomatic and iTunes, my other show, my missing person show, Unfound. Find it on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes as well. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.